You remain standing for the reading of the gospel. It comes to us from Luke's gospel this morning, 23rd chapter, beginning with the 26th verse. As they led Jesus away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and they laid the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A great number of people followed him, and among them were women who were beating their breasts and wailing for them. But Jesus turned to them and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For the days are surely coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two others also who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. When they came to the place that is called the Skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they cast lots to divide his clothing, and the people stood by watching. But the leaders scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Messiah of God." The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was also an inscription over him, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And indeed, we have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he replied, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, while the sun's light failed, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, crying with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last. And when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, "Certainly, this man was innocent." And when all the crowds who had gathered there for this spectacle saw what had taken place, they returned home, beating their breasts. But all the acquaintances, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things. This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
May be seated. It was the year 312. The Roman Emperor Constantine and 40,000 soldiers were about to go into a battle against a rival to that position, Maxentius, at a place called the Milvian Bridge. It would be the final decisive battle in which Constantine consolidated his power as emperor over all the West. About noon, he said, he looked up at the sun and behind it saw an image of light. And the words that accompanied the image said, "In this sign, you will conquer." The sign, his epiphany, was the cross. Later that day, he described how he fell asleep and dreamed, and in his dream, he once again saw that sign, the cross. Now, many historians have been a bit skeptical of the sincerity of Constantine's conversion. In fact, he wouldn't be officially baptized until near his deathbed. But that epiphany he had that day in the cross changed everything about his life and about his rule and about the Roman world over which he governed. As emperor of Rome, he put a stop to the persecution of Christians. He ended crucifixion as a means of execution. He signed the Edict of Milan decriminalizing Christian worship. He called the Council of Nicaea, out of which came the Nicene Creed that defined the orthodox beliefs of the church and still does to this day. He built the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem over the traditional site of Jesus' burial. He built the first St. Peter's Basilica over the site of St. Peter's grave. He made Sunday an official day of rest, ordered all markets closed and government offices except for the one responsible for freeing slaves. He ended gladiator games. He outlawed infanticide. And the list goes on and on. The church recognizes Constantine as the first Christian emperor. And you can argue that his epiphany in the cross that day not only changed his life, it changed the world as everyone knew it at that time. 2,000 years later, the renowned author and psychotherapist Scott Peck wrote, "It was a cross on a hill that changed the moral landscape of the world." Constantine is one example of that change. It is really remarkable, don't you think, that the cross, long an image of Rome's power, their most cruel means of torture and education, that was used to send a frightening message to everyone around that would stifle any hope of rebellion or freedom, that symbol, the cross, would be transformed into arguably the world's most recognized symbol of compassion and hope and the love of God. But certainly Constantine was not the first, nor would he be the last, to have an epiphany in the cross. While the Romans crucified hundreds of people in first century Palestine, it was one cross that they erected that changed everyone who was there to witness it and everything that followed it. Nearly 300 years before Constantine's experience, in the year 33, there was turmoil in the Roman-occupied city of Jerusalem. It was during the Passover. There was a visitor to the city from the city of Cyrene in North Africa, Libya today. His name was Simon. Luke says he was coming in from the country. Luke's way of saying he had no idea what was happening in Jerusalem that day. The streets were crowded and chaotic as he made his way through. A cohort of Roman soldiers were clearing the way, and behind him he saw a beaten and badly bleeding man wearing a crown of thorns and struggling beneath the weight of a beam of wood. Simon's Roman world, it would not be lost upon him that that piece of wood was the transverse beam of a cross. This man, Simon would know, was on his way to his execution by crucifixion. When suddenly one of those soldiers in the cohort grabbed him by the arm and orders him to take the wood from the man and fall in behind them as they made their way on. I am assuming he didn't ask him to volunteer. Simon of Cyrene is not mentioned again. Except that when you read Mark's gospel and he tells this story, he calls Simon the father of Rufus and Alexander. Curious, don't you think, that this man's sons are mentioned by name in a gospel written 30 years after Jesus' death. That a father in Mark's church would be known by his sons. Later, Rufus and his mother are mentioned by the Apostle Paul in his letter to the Romans. I wonder, how long was it before Simon could find someone to tell him about this man whose cross he carried up that hill? How long was it before he heard about Jesus' prophetic words that Simon literally had lived out that day, that anyone who would follow him must take up the cross and follow? What the story tells us is that the cross that day didn't just change Simon. It changed his wife. It changed his children. And I suspect it changed their children and their children and their children as they became followers of this crucified Messiah. All because of an epiphany in the cross. And after Simon carried Jesus' cross to the hill of Calvary, Luke goes on to tell us that Jesus was not the only one crucified there that day. Two criminals were crucified on each side of him. What happens to them as they confront Jesus on the cross is really representative of how the world has viewed the cross ever since. For one thief, the cross meant Jesus could not be the Messiah. So he ridiculed him. "If you're the Messiah, save yourself and save us," he said. Because how could the Messiah be crucified? It's a legitimate question. You could argue that it is that criminal's very question that has kept Jews and Muslims from believing in Jesus as the Son of God and Messiah. The Jews said to be crucified meant you were cursed, coming from Leviticus that said, "Cursed is anyone who hangs upon a tree." But later, a Jewish rabbi named Paul said what he's missed in that is that on that cross, he bore our curse, the curse of sin, the curse of death, and through it, he set us free. And Muslims who believe that Jesus is a prophet says that God would not let the Messiah be crucified. Some even believe it was not Jesus that was on the cross that day, that God had already taken him away and that he would come back again one day. But in the process, they miss the epiphany that on the cross is revealed the suffering love of God. The epiphany of the cross redefines God for us as one who is willing to relinquish power for the sake of love. Power, you might say, causes suffering. Love, on the other hand, absorbs it. And on the cross, it was this convergence of love and power. And on it, God renounced one for the other. And so the cross was changed from a symbol of Roman power to a symbol of suffering love, the love of God for us. And one of those criminals missed it that day. How costly was it for him? The other bandit, however, hath an epiphany in that cross. Hanging there facing his own impending death, he hears the prayers of a man hanging next to him. If he was Jewish, which entirely likely that he was, since Roman citizens were not allowed to be crucified, it was too cruel, he would have noticed that Jesus' prayer was not for his own deliverance. It was not for revenge upon those who put him there. He would have known plenty of those kinds of prayers. From the Psalms, he would have heard them. Instead, he found that Jesus' prayer was, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Hearing him not curse God for his injustice, but relinquishing his spirit into his Father's hands, he comes to Jesus' defense as an innocent man, suffering for others. This criminal has an epiphany in the cross. Secondly, in the face of this innocent man dying on a cross, this criminal has an epiphany about himself, his own sin. Telling his fellow bandit, "We are getting what we deserve for our sins." And so he humbly asks Jesus simply to remember him when he comes into his kingdom. What many of us have discovered since then is the cross will do that to you. It will convict you of your sin, and it will convince you of his love. If you see him there and know that he is there for you, it will do that. While one thief saw the cross as a sign of his impotence and powerlessness, the other saw in the cross the transforming power of his love. And for that man, it changed everything. And then Luke goes on to tell us about another man who was at the cross that day. Another Roman, in fact. Another man of power and authority. The centurion, who obviously was responsible for overseeing the brutal process of nailing him to this cross and erecting it on that hill, whose responsibility it would be to make sure that he died on that cross, that no one came to take him down. He had no choice. He was under orders. It was his job. It also means he was there overhearing all of the taunts of the religious leaders and the crowds. But at the same time, he was overhearing the compassionate, merciful words of the man he had nailed there. He was there when the sun was hidden and darkness fell over the earth. He was there when he died and the earth shook. And Luke tells us that in the cross, this violent, powerful man humbled himself and praised God, saying, "Surely this man was the Son of God." He has an epiphany in the cross. Now, we don't know that centurion's name, but not so long after this, in the book of Acts, which is Luke's volume 2 of the story of Jesus and the church that followed him, He tells another story about a Roman centurion. His name is Cornelius. It says he's a man who feared God and prayed constantly, which I'm assuming was not really the norm for such men as he. He had a vision in which an angel told him to send for a man named Peter to come to his home. He sent his servants and asked Peter to come, and he did. If you know that story, you'll also know that it was in that experience. Peter had his own epiphany about God's love for all people, the Gentiles as well as the Jews. He goes there, tells Cornelius the story of Jesus, and he and his family are baptized. It makes you wonder sometimes if possibly Cornelius was that centurion who was there at the foot of that cross, knowing little about this man, but being changed by the experience of seeing him there on that cross, until it finally brought him and his entire family to be followers of this crucified Messiah. Finally, Luke talks about the crowds who surrounded the cross that day. The crowd that jeered and cheered. The crowds who had been shouting that day, "Crucify him." Luke says they gathered for the spectacle. But when they saw him die on that cross, they went silent. He says they left and went home beating their breasts. It seems like Simon, the criminals, and the centurion, they too had an epiphany in the cross. I think it was, "What have we done?" What they didn't understand yet is it really wasn't what they had done. It was what God had done. What God had done for us. And in the process, He had broken the power of sin and evil. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Colossians, He forgave our trespasses, erasing the record that stood against us with its legal demands. He set this aside, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in the cross. On the cross, suffering love took on cruel power. And when it does, love wins. It may have taken 300 years for the cross to finally topple that power, but it did. And it didn't stop there. For the epiphany of the cross is as powerful today as it was on that Roman hillside or in that Roman battlefield 300 years later. Many centuries after Constantine, a French bishop told this story that in some ways I think captures the enduring power of an epiphany in the cross. He said one afternoon in a small French town, three young Frenchmen sat in a cafe drinking wine, bored with the day and their life and looking for some way to liven up the boredom of their day. One of the young men challenged the other two to go over to the church and into the confessional and to make up the most sordid, shocking confession they could think of, shake the old priest up a little bit. One of the men decided to go. So he goes into the church, makes up his confession, and there he lays it all out. But what happens to him next, he was not prepared for. The priest hears him out and says to him, "This is your penance. I want you to leave the confessional, walk down to the front of the chapel, look up at that cross and the man hanging there, and I want you to say out loud, 'All this thou hast done for me, and I don't give a damn.'" Well, he was not prepared for that. He didn't want to go, but the charade had gone this far. "What are you to say now? I made it all up. I lied about the whole thing." And so he leaves the confessional. He walks to the front of the chapel. He looks up at the cross and the man hanging on it, and he says, "All this thou hast done for me, and I was that man," said the bishop. There is an epiphany in the cross that is like no other. It's why Paul would say, I choose to know nothing among you but Christ crucified. He knew that is enough. It is enough to change Roman emperors and dying criminals and rambunctious young men. The hymn we're about to sing, Isaac Watts wrote in 1707. It speaks in many ways about his own epiphany in the cross. The refrain of the version that we're going to sing was added almost 200 years later by another hymn writer, because the epiphany of the cross keeps speaking across the centuries. Was it for crimes that I have done? He groaned upon the tree. Amazing pity, grace unknown, and love beyond degree. At the cross, where I first saw the light, it was there by faith I received my sight. And now I am happy all the day. There is an epiphany, folks, in the cross. I am sure that there are many of you here like me in this way. For more than 30 years now, I've worn only two pieces of jewelry. One is my wedding band. I put it on 35 years ago in April. Not a day goes by that I don't at some point touch it or see it, and I'm reminded that I am loved, that my wife gave her life to me, and my life belongs to her. The other piece of jewelry is a cross that hangs around my neck. My wife's brother made it for me 33 years ago when I decided to become a follower of Jesus. There is not a day that goes by that I don't touch it and remember that I am loved. That on that cross, Jesus gave His life for me, and that my life belongs to Him. You see, over and over again, the cross never loses its power. I pray that is true for you.